Welcome to Animal House. I'm your host, Dr. Clayton Greenway. This is a show where I invite you into my appointment room and take your questions about your pets. I've been practicing veterinary medicine for 19 years in Toronto. I've completed advanced training in orthopedic surgery, emergency care procedures, and internal medicine in dogs and cats. So this hour is a great opportunity to get your pet vet questions answered. But more importantly, I'm here to help you. I'll give you honest answers so you can make the best medical decisions for your pet. I love helping people who love their pets, so give me a call. We get lots of calls, but if you call in early, I can guarantee that I'll get to your question. And as always, I can promise my listeners one thing. If you care enough to call in, then I will care about your pet and give you the very best medicine I can deliver.
Now, what seems to be the problem? You can tell me. I'm a vet tuner.
That's how we like to start the show. All right. So I was wondering what to talk about this morning. I looked up some news and things like that. And then I thought, you know what? I thought I'd share with you how I started the radio show. Because it's been on for, oh gosh, what's it been? Almost 8.5 years. I started this show the same week my third child was born, Jack. And it was a couple days after that. I didn't have a lot of sleep. So when I said yes to it, I don't know if I was making the clearest decision. But I was at the time very motivated, so I had no ability to say no to any opportunity. I think now I scrutinize a little more, but I've always enjoyed doing the show. It's quite a blast. It takes years to finally not be scared before the show starts. In any event, I was working at a clinic for someone who owned multiple clinics. And I figured at some point this person was going to want to brand their clinic. So I thought, well, I'm a vet. They're going to have to put someone out front if they brand it. I'm going to make it so that I'm the only choice. So I thought I'd get involved with a little bit of some media. And I had appeared on Ann Romer. And I had of course, the clinic's never branded. That was the other thing. But it led to this anyways. And so I had a friend who was working at News Talk, and he would put on people for the Ask the Expert show. And all the shows weren't booked. I mean, some of them were open. So he called me and he said, do you want to be on? You know, do you want to be the expert? We'll just charge you a little bit and you can come on. And of course, for a vet that was working at one clinic, it doesn't make a lot of sense because people don't really want to drive that far with their pets. But I thought this could be an opportunity for that. So I appeared on it once or twice, and I thought, you know, this is not bad. This is a good platform. And I figured if this company I worked for was going to brand, I should try to have my own radio show. And so I actually sat down at a desk, and I wrote down on a piece of paper, how do I get my own radio show for free, is what I had put down. And I'm still surprised when I think back about that. Like, I thought I could actually do it. And I thought that this will never happen. But I thought, okay, well, let's think about this very straightforward. And I'd encourage anyone out there to do this with their lives or profession. You really sit back and you take yourself out of the equation and you look at everybody else. You look at the station, you look at the people listening, and you think, what is the dynamic here and how can I fill this? What do they need? And I was really in a realm of wanting to see people do well and do well by them and see them succeed. So I thought, okay, well, let's just think about this critically, unrelated to what I want. Really, let's look at the situation. And I thought, well, what does the station hear from the listening public? I figured if I just thought about that, it might help me figure out what's going on. And I figured at the time, the program director, what does he hear from the public? And it hit me that he probably hears really bad things. He probably hears people upset and frustrated with certain things that are said on the radio. In fact, I think it's one thing you can always rely on, is that there's always going to be someone bothered and sending in something negative and things like that. And that's just, you know, it's just normal human behavior. It's critical and it's criticism. And so I thought, well, how do I make it so that the program director hears nothing but good things, like just a wall, an absolute smashing wall of positive things? That would make him take notice. So I figured, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to appear on these Ask the Expert shows, and I figured every time somebody phones in, whether they get on the air or not, I'm going to write down their name and their number. And so this is what I did. And after the shows, I phoned them and I helped them with their pets. And I went by their homes after they had heard me on the radio. And I treat their animals for free. And I thought, you know, if all of a sudden these people were endeared, you know, I'd be at a place. I mean, I remember going to one place with my dad and chasing down a cat with an oral hematoma, a blood vessel in its ear had popped, and I drained it in the guy's house and stuff like that. And these people were so impressed and thankful. They said, what can I do? You know, do I owe you money? I said, no, not at all. And I said, you know what you could do? You could send in a note to the program director and say that, you know, you really like the show and that sort of thing. And they said, oh, well, I'll do that for sure. And I said, listen, don't do it yet. I said, just I'll tell you when to do it. Okay. That's the part that's a little bit manipulative, but it's all for positive. So basically, I appeared on Ask the Expert a number of times. I built up, you know, a number of these visits, and basically I asked for my ratings, and then I called everybody and said, now send an email. And I swear, the next week, Monday morning, the program director asked me if I wanted to have my own show. And I could not believe it. I couldn't believe that it worked. Now, I've since told him that, and he said, I don't think that was what happened. But honestly, I think with people, you know, he was trying to put on a good show. The ratings were fantastic, much better than we ever thought. You know, people love pet content. And you know what? I was helping people, and I have helped people, and it's been a wonderful platform for that. And I enjoy it. I think it's positive all the way around. So how you get there, you know, I wasn't top of the class. I was bottom of the class, okay? But I believe that someone should be in a position, not because of their brains or what they got on a test. I believe they should be in that position because they passionately want to be there. And I think that's just as important, if not more important, than a person who's, you know, got the attributes, the certificate, things like that. I think, you know, with no experience on the radio and, you know, certainly smarter veterinarians out there, I don't know if anyone cared enough, and I did. And I think that makes the difference. I think that's why someone should be in a position. And I promise you, if you apply this sort of thing to your life and you sit back and you look at what you would like to have, you could figure that out too and find a way to get there. All right. I thought I'd share that with you. Let's go to the phones. Aha, let's go to Mary with Gracie. You've got a 14-year-old Woodle. So what's going on?
Mobility issues. She's a little stiff in her hips.
Okay.
And she's given a monthly Cartrafin injection.
Okay.
And I just started her on Cosequin.
Okay, so we try not to, I usually don't use drug names just in case, but that's okay. So basically, these are interesting. I like this because those injections, they're not like hardcore drugs. They are more of a, you know, it's not like it, like the anti-inflammatory can be hard on the system. These injectables are really fantastic for this sort of thing and for joint health, and they tend to work pretty well. How has that worked?
When she gets them, she's a little bit more, in the next few days, she's okay. She's a little bit mobile. But,
okay.
She's 14, you know.
Yeah.
She's tired kind of thing.
Yeah.
But when she does get going, a good stiff breeze, she's happy.
Yeah. Do you use anything else? Like, do you use an anti-inflammatory? Are you using other, probably glucosamines and things like this?
Just started on that and some omega-3s. That's it.
Okay. So started on some glucosamines. You haven't gone to the anti-inflammatories yet?
Isn't that what the Cartrafin is?
Well, one of them is. The question is how often? Are you using that every day?
No, they gave her injections weekly in July, and now it's just once a month.
Okay. So here's what I'd say about that. So where are you at with this now? Like what, you know, when you mention here, it says stomach issues and rapid weight, but I only see rapid weight.
She did have parasites, and then they gave her a treatment for that, tested again, no parasites. But she still kind of has the soft poops runny sometimes, and she's lost a pound since June, but all her blood work came back normal.
Okay. Yeah. You know, look, the blood work being normal, that's good. Mm-hmm. What blood work doesn't find very well, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, is, you know, when you talk about weight loss or stomach issues, you always worry about some type of inflammatory or growth type of thing that can be there. Sometimes blood work doesn't represent that well, and it's more like x-rays. But I think by the sounds of it, it doesn't sound bad. It doesn't mm-hmm. sound like, you know, it very well could be the parasites. Usually that's not enough to cause weight loss. But look, she's a little older too. Are you seeing the muscle mass loss in her legs? Like, can you see the bones of her legs a little easier?
You always saw the bones in her legs. She's never been a heavy okay. dog. She's always right. been perfect weight. So you
so what are you,
your ribs a little bit more.
Yeah, what are you looking for now? Are you worried that it's, things aren't working or what's next?
We just want her to have a little more quality of life.
Okay.
Do you know what I
yeah.
mean?
Yeah. Here's the best advice. You're on most things right now, okay? Mm-hmm. So you're doing pretty well. There's not a lot of different places to go at this point. But one thing that can work is the injections of sort of the non-anti-inflammatory, those things, they can run their course. And they can end up not working as well because they'll get habituated to it. Let me say this. I've got to go to commercial break, but hang on the line. And when I come back, I'm going to tell you about, you know, what do we do when the medication we're using doesn't quite yield the results that it did when we first gave it, and where do we go from there? So just hang on there, Mary, and we'll come back and get your question. You're listening to Animal House. Welcome back to Animal House. We're having a good time this morning, and thanks for listening. Where we left off, we were talking to Mary with Gracie, who has arthritis. She's 14 years old, and things are, Mary, are things as good as they were when the medication started, or you're seeing that drop off?
It's not getting worse.
It's not getting worse. Okay.
No.
So that's not too bad. You would like it to be a little better, but obviously this is a, you know, it's a declining condition, unfortunately. I don't like mm-hmm. to say that pessimistically, but we all get older. At 14 years old, you start looking at her and saying, you know, look, how is she doing, her quality of life? I mean, as long as she has quality of life, let's keep things going. And, you know, mobility is a big deal, because once a dog loses mobility, then it's a real issue. So one of the things you can do is you can talk to the vet about a couple things. One, you could try a different anti-inflammatory when and if that one is not doing the job that you like, or you could just trial on a different anti-inflammatory and you might see a really nice bump in how she does. Some of them seem to respond a little differently to each medication too. Some are, you know, work a little better, that kind of thing. You can also fool around with the dosage depending on what you've been prescribed. The other thing you can look at, because you're hitting the marks on everything else, like glucosamine, her weight's okay, things like that. Does she have any problems in the home getting around?
We have to put, just when she's standing eating at her bowl, you have to put like a mat under her legs so
yeah.
her legs don't slip.
Okay, so that's one thing.
Sometimes she'll go up the stairs, sometimes she won't.
Yeah. And sometimes that has to do with how much exercise she gets, how much her joints may be problematic or whatever. Mm-hmm. So sometimes managing her exercise is good. And also, slippery surfaces for sure. You can put runners down and stuff like that. The other thing is then there's the things like chiropractic and acupuncture. I don't know if you've heard mm-hmm. or considered those, but, some people swear by them. They've said they've seen really good results. I'm not trained in them, but, I do work with, other professionals who do that and kind of talk to them about synergizing between the traditional medicine and what they offer. And there's been a lot of people who've seen a lot of benefit to it. So okay. those would be the considerations I have for you. Okay. But I appreciate you calling in, and I hope things go well and continue to go well. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Adam with Maggie. You're talking about dental issues in your 3-year-old golden doodle. What's going on?
Yes, absolutely. So we have, we brush our teeth quite regularly, but it doesn't seem to be doing the trick. So we bought like Whimsies, dental chews, plaque busters, all those sorts of things. She ends up just taking them, you know, whining a little bit and hiding them, and she never actually eats them.
Okay, yeah. Well, let me tell you, one thing I want to say is that's a good thing. Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because they don't work. And, you know, you've named a couple products there. They have a little bit of a benefit. But if I were to ask you, what do you eat to clean your teeth?
That's a good question.
It's a good question, right? Well, just think about it. What do you chew on to clean your teeth?
I don't know. That's marketing too.
Now here's the thing. There's nothing. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Yeah. It's really an amazing psychology that we think we can give our pet a treat and it'll clean their teeth. This is ridiculous, and I'll tell you why. Because you don't think the dentists have figured out how to make money? They make money. They make really good money. In fact, so much so that if something like that worked, there would be a treat, and I'd be giving it to my kids on the way to school. Okay, but it's there isn't one, so there, what is it, a whole industry where they're saying, ah, you know what, let's not make money today, we won't even make those things. It's right. not going to happen. So let me ask you this, how did you start brushing the teeth, and how has that been going? Because a lot of people find that pretty tough.
I started about 2 years ago. And to do it 2 to 3 times a week. It's fine. At first it was challenging, but she's gotten used to it. She still just sticks her tongue out and tries to lick the toothpaste, and it gets everywhere. But it's so far, it's okay. I'm looking for more, you know?
Yeah. Here's the thing. There really isn't any. You know, there's stuff you can add. There's an additive for the water. This is actually something that's gotten the Veterinary Oral Health Council approval, which is kind of amazing. Somebody kind of juiced that one to get it done. Because they're only supposed to put that label on things that work. And all of these things can add up just a little. But it all completely pales in comparison to brushing the teeth. And there's just no magic bullet. Like, at the end of the day, we brush our teeth, you know, 2-3 times a day, whatever it is. They say that if you don't brush almost every day on your dog's teeth, like, I think about my kids, if I let them not brush their teeth once, you know, that plaque turns into like calculus. And I think there was, you know, in between dental visits, I remember I went through a period where I wasn't so happy. I'd just go to bed sometimes and not brush my teeth as well. And definitely there was a noticeable difference, okay? the bottom line is that's what you got to do. I really feel bad for people because they go to the vet, and every time they go to the vet, the vet says something about their teeth. And, you know, it's not something that you see bother the dog or anything like that. It's a hard thing to pay attention to, but it does put an impact on their overall health. So I appreciate the call, but there's really the only thing I can say is just the brushing. And I think watching some other videos of how to brush their teeth, you might be able to pick up a different technique or two, and that might be all right, and that might help you out. But really, that's about it. And I wouldn't I would save your money on all of those things that are supposed to improve the teeth. It's just not possible. But I appreciate the call. The one thing that I think in veterinary medicine that's missing is some type of dental hygienist that you can go to. Anesthesia-free dentistry is something that can't really be done because you've got to get under the gums. Some people argue about it, but it's true, there can be disease going on under the gums, particularly with the cats. That's where it happens. So really, if you're not getting under there, if you're not using anesthesia, you can't really do a thorough job. And that's not me promoting it. It can sound like that. But the bottom line is we've done studies where you just clean the teeth versus actually doing a clean under anesthesia and getting under there is this massive difference in what happens with dental disease. So, you know, some people do it and some people don't, and I never make people feel bad if they're not doing it. I think the most important thing is you take care of your pet, and these things, you know, some stuff we have money for, some stuff we don't, so you try your best either way. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Joanne. You've got Jesse, a 10-year-old lab, who's getting some anxieties.
Yeah, so I'm hoping there's something we can do to help her, but she all of a sudden she won't cross, like, we've got wooden bridges in our neighborhood through the park. She won't cross them. Like, she kind of pulls away, and she won't get into our cars anymore. And if we do get her into a car, she won't get out of the car. We go camping, and she won't go in the trailer. Like, we have to kind of, and she fights it too when we pick her up to get her into the trailer. She's like flailing, and so it's really difficult. And another thing that she's doing is, like, when we cross the road, like a crosswalk that has those painted lines that go all the way across, she just won't have it. She just kind of like pulls off to the side.
Okay,
she won't cross on the line. So I don't know. And I don't know if I already said she won't go through doorways like as
is
she, go to a vet.
How is she doing otherwise, like as a lab? Does she have any arthritis, any weakness? I mean, is she healthy otherwise completely?
Like, I don't think she has any arthritis. Like, she takes glucosamine and fish oil.
Yeah.
And, like, she runs around in our backyard, and sometimes she jumps right up onto our deck and, like, completely misses, gets the stairs.
Okay. Does she have any stiffness or soreness when she gets up from naps and stuff like that? Are you seeing things like that?
Yeah, maybe once in a while when she's been lying down, she gets up and just kind of like seems to need to stretch a bit before she starts walking, and a little slower getting up, like from when she's lying down, she's a little slower to stand up than she used to be.
All right. How about this? We've got to go to commercial break. I want you to hang on, Joanne, because I got one more question that I think I have a pretty decent idea about how to help your dog who's getting nervous about all these different things. When we come back, we'll answer that. You're listening to Animal House. Welcome back to Animal House. Thanks for listening. As I always say, listen to the radio and then take the dog for a walk. Where we left off, we were talking to Joanne with Jesse, a 10-year-old lab who's afraid of going into and out of cars, going through doorways, crossing the street with lines on the ground. Joanne, you're still there?
Yes.
I have a question for you. Is your dog overweight?
Yes. I think a little bit. Like she's
no problem. That's okay. That's all I need to know. Labs are interesting because that's something that can happen. So what's really fascinating about this is right off the bat, I thought I might know the answer to this, and it's really common. This one's actually a little different. I haven't heard a question quite like this. Usually when they're afraid of things like doorways and stuff like that, a door might have hit them, or they might have slipped around a door. And one of the things that with dogs is there are times where they're afraid of certain parts of the floor because they've slipped on it. So they don't think, oh, I just fell down. They think, wow, the floor just came up and bit me, right?
Okay.
And they can start to develop anxieties and that sort of thing. So an overweight lab with arthritis can have some weakness. So those slips can happen. But why then is she afraid of the lines on the ground when she's crossing the street, right? So I thought, well, that's really interesting. This is a little bit different. So it must be a little, like, to me, all of this talk, it speaks to anxiety. But the anxiety, where's it coming from? So really, there are different places. One, it can just be a bit of age. And when I say age, sure, there can be a little senility, but you haven't said anything about her and her mental acuity. But the thing is with age comes a little bit of weakness as well. And that plays into the overweight and arthritis. And you don't have as much control over your body and your surroundings. And you can end up having just a bit of a generalized anxiety. I believe people feel this as well when they get older. They're just not doing things as fast or as rapidly, or they're nervous about something they used to do as a younger person right away. And I mean about things like going on trips and getting ready for trips and stuff like that. They take longer, they're just anxious about forgetting something or not getting somewhere on time, just because things take longer. And so what I'd say is you can look at a couple things. One, you can, you did say she's stiff and sore when she gets up and stuff like that. You could go on a brief trial of an anti-inflammatory and at least talk to the vet first about the potential for arthritis, see if that could be the cause. This breed is extremely common with it, particularly when they're overweight. You could try that. If that doesn't work and the vet can't find another reason for, a bit of anxiety, and there's not many other reasons for it other than that, then what you could try is let's say, a natural supplement first, but then maybe even a medication if you're seeing that this is affecting her life, but an anti-anxiety treatment of some kind. And I usually set people up for this when I do see their pets getting older and experiencing some anxiety. It can't be very nice for them. And it tells us that something's wrong. And that's why I can tell in your voice that this doesn't sound serious to some people, but I think it actually is affecting her every day. And I think it's affecting just her happiness, the way she is. And she's this generalized anxiety. And so, I try that trial first, see if it's the arthritis, but it seems really that it's manifested into something. You may want to try an anti-anxiety trial. Doesn't mean that you're on this anti-anxiety stuff forever. It could be a month or two and she learns to be a little more more relaxed, a little more confident, and then she's in decent shape. Those are things that I would try, and I'll tell you this. Not a lot of vets pay attention to these sorts of signs, and I really do think it hits at their quality of life quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay, so I just want to ask you about the anti-anxiety, because the last time we had to take her to the vet, and they know what she's like, they gave me something, and I can't exactly remember what it was called.
No problem, yeah.
I was to give it to her a few hours before the appointment,
yeah.
And it still didn't help. She still wouldn't get out of the car.
Okay.
They had to come into the car to take her
blood. It just means that, whatever, wow, so it's getting quite serious, obviously, just even getting her out of the car for blood work. I mean, that's getting pretty bad. So what I'd say is whatever they gave her, it's just not a good enough thing to use as a trial. Like, you could try that every day and see if there's a difference, but I think you go to more of a mainstream medication. I have to just move on. I think you'll be in good shape if you try those next and then see what happens. You're always welcome to call back and let us know how it's going, because it's a lot more serious than I think a lot of people are realizing. But let me move on so I can help others. I really appreciate the call. If anybody out there has a question, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we'll help you out. Marilyn, you've got Mango, a three-year-old basset hound. Kennel coughs happening? What's going on? Are you there, Marilyn? We might have lost her. Let's go to, this is a good one. Candace, you've got Hogan, a 13-year-old lab. How are you doing? What's going on with Hogan?
Hi, Dr. Greenway. Hogan has what the vet is calling a partial paralysis in his larynx.
Yeah.
He also has nosebleeds, which are intermittent, and they come out of one nostril. And it's almost a burst of blood, and then it stops really quickly. So it's like maybe a minute worth of bleeding, and then it stops.
Okay. Let me ask you this. What is there with the laryngeal paralysis? So to catch everybody up, this particular breed gets this when they're older, and he's 13. There are little arytenoids that open and close at the top of our airway. So that when we're eating, the food doesn't go down our windpipe, and it goes really into our esophagus to go down to our stomach. So the air comes through here, and these little flaps, if they get weakened and they're not opening very well, it starts to be difficult to breathe. Their breathing gets very rough. This type of stuff. Their bark is a little off. Were you seeing this?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, what about coughing and stuff like that?
He clears his throat a bit sometimes, but it's mostly when he's walking up hills or doing something a little bit strenuous.
Okay, and so how's he doing otherwise as far as appetite, weight, things like that? Is he losing any?
He's a lab. He just eats and eats and eats.
Sure. Okay. So what about his weight? Is his weight staying stable?
Yeah, his weight is stable, and he's always been a good weight. We've always monitored, we have labs all the time, and we monitor their weights.
Okay. What have they talked about with the laryngeal paralysis? Is that at a point where it's concerning? What have they talked about as far as treatment?
They basically said that they're monitoring. That there really isn't anything except for maybe an invasive exploratory to see what's there.
Not quite an exploratory. It's probably, I mean, if they're quite certain about that, the tough thing is diagnosing that for sure. What you actually have to do is give them just a little bit of sedative and actually watch their airway. They have to be at a level of, they're knocked out so you can actually see way back there. And you actually have to watch these things move and see if they're sluggish. Usually, a lot of it comes from the clinical symptoms. Here's the thing that I'm really concerned about. I have not seen laryngeal paralysis coupled with nosebleeds from one nostril. And here's the thing. Nosebleeds are one thing, but nosebleeds from one nostril, that bothers me. Okay? And the reason I'm asking about the coughing and stuff like that, what about sneezing? Is there a lot of sneezing at all?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
One of the things is... But every so often he'll sneeze, yeah. and it's usually the sneeze that'll bring on the nosebleed.
Yeah. So here's what I'm thinking is basically, I think you have two conditions going on, possibly. I mean, remember, I have not, you know, physically examined or done any testing, so I don't want to be certain about this, but somewhere to go with it is what I try to give people. One of the things is the laryngeal paralysis. That's monitored until it's like at a point where it's really bad and you can do the surgery. And it's not terrible. Like, they'll do really well with it and then they're fine, right? It completely solves the problem. And they will actually get so bad as to succumb to this problem with this, the flaps not moving. They will die yeah. from it eventually. Possibly if it declines to that degree. The thing with the nosebleeds, so when you're bleeding just generally, it can be things like clotting disorders and stuff like that. But nosebleeds from one nostril means something's going on in there. There's some type of damage to the tissue or something's happening. The fact that they're sneezing might mean that it's up in the sort of sinuses and stuff like that. It might be an infection on that side of the sinuses and airway. I'd probably look at them doing a culture, looking for something called aspergillosis, like an infection that could be in there. But there are there. Yeah, go ahead.
We've done 3 courses of antibiotics now.
Yeah, see, you're just doing, but the thing is, here's the thing. I know what's going to be said here. It's treatments that are happening. Those antibiotics, this is not just a simple infection. I mean, there's bleeding, there's damage of the tissues. So, quite frankly, it's either a deep, very difficult infection or like fungal or something like that. I'd get an x-ray of the chest and I'd get some imaging if you can up there. I mean, you literally have to scope up there. So I'd swab pretty deeply and see if anything grows. The other thing is from there, you know, there are cancers that can cause a problem up there. These are there's only a few things that cause this unilateral nose bleeding. So I'd really go down that train. Couple rounds of antibiotics. No, there's things that can be much more serious. I wouldn't be fooling around with that. I'd try to get a diagnosis. And it's tough to pull the trigger on that. I've got to go to commercial break. I'm a little bit over. I appreciate the call. When we come back, more of your calls. You're listening to Animal House. Welcome back to Animal House. We're having a good time. You know what? There are 2 callers on the line, and they're very similar questions. There's Leona with Buddy and Brenda with Baby. And Leona's cat is 5 years old. Brenda's is 6 years old. One of them is having recurring upper respiratory issues, and the other one is on and off medications for a virus and sometimes sneezes and blood comes out. Both of these, I believe, are upper respiratory. So you know what? I'm going to do something I've never done before, and it'll probably be a mess, but we'll see what happens. Just because these Leona and Brenda should really be best friends because they have a cat about the same age with the same problems. So I'm going to try to put them on at the same time. So why don't we do that, Mike, and we'll see what happens. Leona, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Brenda. Hi, Doctor. Hi, Leona. How you doing? Hi, Doctor.
All right. Let me ask, Brenda, let me ask you first with Baby. The medication is for a thought of an infection up in the airways?
Well, they call in, apparently it's the herpes virus, which is very common in cats.
How do you know that?
Well, that's what my vet told me.
And that's just without a test?
Oh, no, she was tested. This has been about 3 or 4 years now. She's been on this medication, an antibiotic, and then this other Amiclor.
So that's okay. We usually don't talk about drug
names.
Okay,
right. Okay.
Leona, do you see what I would believe with yours recurring upper respiratory issue? Have you gone on trials and trials of antibiotics?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know that much about his history because it's my neighbor's cat just crossed the drive that I'm cat was cat
uh-huh.
and very well, much like Brenda's. He sneezes and he sneezed on the floor and I wiped it up and there was a trace of blood in the mucus that came out.
Yeah.
And also the bridge of his nose is very swollen. Now they took him to the vet because they take care of their animals, but he said he's had it before, and my main question was, I guess, because it's out of my hands, he's on antibiotics now, is there anything different or that we can do about the recurring?
So let me ask both of you, were these rescue cats, you know?
Yes. I don't.
Yeah. So, Brenda, you know for sure. Leona.
Feral, apparently, yeah.
And Leona, you're not as sure, but this is quite common for cats that are adopted or they've been outside, is that they can have a virus that sticks around for a really long time. And particularly, Leona, when you mentioned about this swelling in the nose, and Brenda, as you may know, you're further along there with the blood coming out, is that there's damage in the tissues up there. And so what happens is this virus gets up there, it creates damage of the lining of the tissues, and then a secondary infection comes in and creates an infection. Brenda, I would imagine that you went on antibiotics a few times before learning that it's herpes because things weren't getting better. It was just coming back every time.
No, actually, originally, because he took care of her right from the day we got her.
Okay.
So he had removed three teeth because she had some broken teeth, and he cleaned her up and everything. And then about 6 months later, she started this sneezing. And then so I'd taken her in, and he had apparently they had done some tests and everything, and they said that's what it was. It was a herpes virus, which is very common in cats, apparently.
Yeah. So here's let me do this, Leona. Let me take care of what you should do there and talk to your neighbor about is if they're doing an antibiotic, you can try an antibiotic for an infection. But the fact that the bridge of the nose is swollen and things like that, there's something more serious going on in there. I do the exact same thing. It's something called an upper respiratory panel and see what other infectious agents are there. And you might find that it's something like herpes. There's other ones as well, like Khaleesi. There's actually other things that may be treatable as well. Now the antibiotic won't exactly get rid of the virus, but you've got to give it anyways, and then
so just continue on it.
Yeah,
and Brenda, for her life.
Yeah, so you're on this.
Well, I'm on two. He gives her an antibiotic, and then he gives
and
her
then
this
the
other one.
Antiviral.
Yeah, and he says in this other one that she'll be on for the rest of her life.
Yeah, and the thing is these things, they stay in there for a really long time. The only other option, once this tissue gets damaged, there's a lot of great places for these things to hide because there's so much scar tissue. Sometimes the drug doesn't get to certain places in there because of scar tissue that's formed, and now you've got a stable infection that you can battle back to this little hiding spot, but then it grows back out of there. And so you're going to be doing this for quite some time. The only other option to add in is actually doing a procedure where you go up there and flush it out, scrape it, things like that. Typically, it's possible to get rid of, like to actually solve it to a degree that you're, you know, not having recurrent problems that are as bad because you're really solving that tissue problem. So I'd probably, you're definitely on the right track, Leona. I think I'd catch up with that with a test or recommend that to your neighbor. So let me just ask you, Brenda, is that, you know, you are on the right thing. This is the right course. I talked to your vet about that. But other than that, there's pretty much nowhere else to go. Do you have any other question?
Yes, I was just going to, my neighbor has apparently her cat was sneezing all the time and she had taken to a different vet and said that her cat takes Claritin. Like she cuts it up into like eighths or something, and she gives it Claritin every day. So I'm just wondering, do you think it could be a sinus thing? Do you, like, you know, humans have this sinus problem, and I didn't want to give it to her, but I'm just wondering, do you think I should start with that?
Well, I guess a good question, which is a little bit prickly, is me saying, have you ever had allergies to the point that you're bleeding?
No, but she doesn't bleed very often. It's just a little
understand. So the thing is there's damage in there beyond that. And I got to tell you, I've actually never put a cat on antihistamines. And by the way, they do not do well with them. They are not. They are pretty, in some ways, pretty, like you can't give it intravenously to a cat. They don't handle them that well. I'd just be a little bit mindful of that, like giving it orally, just get the dosage and stuff like that. But I've never given an antihistamine to a cat for things like sinus stuff. I mean, it's always, you know, there's certainly infection, right? So that's what I would be looking at. I don't think at this point is going to help that much, and the allergy aspect is really muted at that point. I really appreciate the calls, and thanks very much. You're on the right track there. And Leona, you just got to catch up with one of those tests, and I think you'll be in good shape. All right. The experiment of having two people on at the same time may not have worked out every pet is an individual, and they all have individual problems. Marilyn with Mango, you're back on the line. I've got about 45 seconds. You're dealing with kennel cough.
Okay, here we go. She's got kennel cough. This other basset hound has kennel cough. Mango is 1 week in on it.
Yep.
Snickers is 3 days behind her. They live with two bulldogs and an old wiener dog. When can they got it from a flyball tournament? They're sitting out this week. When can they go back to class and practice?
That's a good question. I don't want to confuse anyone with COVID here, but if you've got kennel cough, we've all got to protect our own pets. So we've got to assume there could be kennel cough out there, and dogs are in the park with kennel cough. So in essence, they could go back, but ideally, you wouldn't want to expose other dogs to it. You don't want them coughing. That's it. The cough will persist a little bit beyond the infection, but ideally the coughing being finished and stopped, and you still want to have the antibiotic going just a little bit beyond that. And then I'd say it's probably safe. I really appreciate the calls. Thanks for waiting on the line. If I didn't get to your question, call right away next week, and we will help you out. Be good to your pets.
Dogs and cats living together.
Mass hysteria.